Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:57 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 23rd, and I thought I would kick off today with a look at the pound versus the euro. And the pound is falling through 1.10 euro in here over the last couple of days. And 1.10 had been both a psychological potential area of support and an historic area of support, but also we can see that there are an increasing number of people thinking about, are we going to see parity? Back in 2008, it didn't quite get to parity, but there's this uncertainty about what it is that the UK is going to end up paying. Obviously, if the UK leaves the EU, then the rebate that they get from the EU budget will obviously be removed, and then the question is how much they're going to have to continue to have to pay into the EU budget. I was looking for a figure along those lines, and Switzerland, for example, pays about 0.02 of 1% of GDP into the EU budget. But of course, these figures are in percentages of GDP, so one obviously has to look at the size of the respective economies. And the UK currently pays about a quarter of 1% of GDP. The EU wants to be able to balance its budget. That is what they need, and that is obviously also why they are so keen to get that questions squared away before they even begin to talk about trade. But the UK needs to get the trade question battened down, and that is where the big arbitrage is between the two negotiating sides. What we saw today was that the UK is willing to accept some concessions on the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice, and that is was previously a red line, and that red line is becoming progressively fuzzier as the negotiations go on. What that also means is that the potential, and of course this is highly important for the city because the financial and legal sectors represent such a cash cow for the UK economy that what happens in terms of their ability to offer services on a cross-jurisdictional basis is going to be tied to the Brexit negotiations, and they are very much angling towards that UK law would be quite similar to the EU, and that would of course help to affect trade between the two blocs. But of course, what the UK wants, perhaps more than anything else, is control over its border. Part of the reason that this is a question at all is because both the UK and Ireland accepted unlimited numbers of immigrants when Eastern Europe opened up. Germany did not. Now, that I think is a question that seems to be largely forgotten in terms of all of this, the discussion about the rights of immigrants. The fact is that both the UK and Ireland accepted masses of people from Eastern Europe, and that has now contributed to some of the questions that people have about the rights and obligations of new immigrants. Whereas we don't quite have the same, there isn't the 10-year or even 15-year history of that in Germany. What Germany is obviously now beginning to grapple with is the number of illegal immigrants that they have, that are self-styled refugees. So that is also a massive problem here. And then the question is whether that is going to become an election issue for Germany. When we continue to look at this pound, then it is in need of a clear upward dynamic to check momentum. It is quite overextended on the downside relative to the MA, but there's no sign yet that it has stopped going down. When we look at the FTSE, then it is right in the region of the trend mean. And that's a condition that's, I think, reasonably similar to just about all of the major indices. That didn't take. When we look at not just the FTSE 100, but we can look at, for example, the FTSE 350 or the Europe Stoxx 600, then we all see that they have a progression back towards the mean, that it has been coming down slower than it went up. But this is now the area where, if support is going to be found, then this is about the area for it to begin to be reasserted. What is also worth considering is that it isn't just the Nasdaq 100 that was subject to some volatility. The Russell 2000 failed to sustain the break higher in late July and has pulled all the way back to the lower side of its range. And the value at the present moment corresponds with the region of the trend mean. So this is a natural area where we could anticipate support beginning to come back to dominance. It's also worth, I think, taking a look at the transportation index, and that is now also in the region of the trend mean. So then if we just round out and look at continue to look at the Dow theory, the Dow Jones Industrials has paused in the region of this 22,000 level, but on this weekly chart, you can barely see that there's been a pullback. And that's despite the fact that there have been a large number of column inches filled with talk about the VIX. And the VIX has pulled back. It's not quite at the depressed levels that it was at the beginning of the month, but it's certainly not surging higher in here. And that also, I think, really does help to ram home the point that when we look at the headlines, when we look at the extent to which people have been worrying about the market, then we also have to look at and deal with the market and the reality provided by it. And the reality is quite clear that there is no evidence of type 1, type 2, or type 3 trend-ending characteristics on these indices. And as long as that remains the case, then any panic is likely to be short-lived, and that as long as the progression of higher reaction lows remains intact, then this is going to remain a reasonably steady environment. But the reality is that the majority of these indices are in the region of big psychological levels, so it isn't at all impossible that we could have a somewhat larger reaction or a somewhat lengthier pause in the region of these big psychological levels before we can see these markets breaking higher once more. And when we look at the commodity complex, oil prices continue to pause around this $52 area, but they have held in this region now for much of the month so far, and they are firming within the range. The progression of lower rally highs since January remains intact. $54 is not that far away, and it does represent where, if the downward bias is to be broken, then it will have to push above that level. Then, when we look at copper, and it is so often referred to as Dr. Copper, and as a lead indicator or an indication of the health of the global economy, it is testing this psychological $3 level on the COMEX contract, and it has paused here for the last three sessions, but it doesn't look like it's anything other than a pause. And as long as it is holding that $2.80 area, then I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and that would suggest that the relative strength that we're seeing in a number of the industrial commodities is likely to and these industrial metal tickers are quite long, but we can see, for example, zinc has broken up and away from this range, and that's really quite an impressive breakout. And when I was doing my click through today, what I also noticed was lead, and lead prices have also begun to firm in here, and they've been ranging below $2,500 since 2011, and this looks like a bullish consolidation prior to a successful upward break. The fact that the industrial metal complex is doing better is supportive of the contention that we are back in a period of synchronized global economic expansion, and generally speaking, that is reasonably good news. When we look at what's happening out there in the wider world, then the yen is at a critical juncture, and what we are seeing is that the dollar continues to test the lower side of this range. It is, I think this is really quite important, what exactly is going to happen with the dollar, the extent to which there's uncertainty in the political arena, and the volatility of the head of state is really quite something, and it is contributing to this rather bearish environment for the US dollar index. It's right at the lower side of a more than 2 year range, but it's been barely steady here. And there hasn't been anything like the kind of upward dynamics that we saw immediately after after the presidential election. And it really does need to break above 94. If we see it falling again tomorrow, then it will have broken that very short-term progression of high reaction lows. So then there is the potential that we could have a further test of underlying trading, because since we are at the lower side of the range, if it fails here, then the next area of potential support is quite a bit below where prices are trading right now. And that's important for the precious metals. Gold prices are holding here below $1,300. And if it can sustain a move above 1300, well, then that will begin to reassert demand dominance and begin to confirm that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. And that's also, I think, something that is helping to inform the fact that silver prices have been reasonably steady in here, and platinum prices have also been reasonably steady. I think just an additional, if we look at just spin out and look at what's happening in Asia, the Indonesian market is holding this move to new high ground. It is, and what is, I think, quite important is that the rupiah has been practically inert over the last, well, most of the last year. And that is following what had been a multi-year decline over from 2011 all the way through to 2015. So that's additional evidence that we're getting some stability in these commodity-related currencies. And when we look at the Asian dollar index, which is obviously heavily weighted by renminbi, then it has been trending higher just about all year. When we look at India, then the Nifty index has also been pausing around this psychological 10,000 level, but again, it doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation. So, despite the fact that we have had this uptick in single stock volatility, where there has been some really quite enormous moves in certain stocks, whereas generally speaking, the mega cap shares have been doing better. That is, I think, that is further emphasizing this not only just polarization that we're having in the market, but also that the major indices are being driven by index buying, and ETFs are such a large proportion of buying right now that they're helping to contribute to the relatively inert environment. And that's certainly been the case over, I think, this pause in consolidation that we've seen in markets of late. When, and I guess just one final thought on the government bond price, and I'm putting up the 10-year yield. It is strengthening through 2.2% in here today. And when we look at the long bond future, it is back above 155. It failed in that region back in June, and it is now back testing its peak. A similar downward dynamic would be required to check potential for additional upside here. What that would suggest to me, at least, is that as long as stock markets are pausing, that bond investors will be seeking to increase their positioning, and that could contribute to lower to lat continued lower to lateral ranging in the bond yield. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.